You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. It's David Baer here, and today we're going to be talking about a topic I know absolutely, I was going to say nothing about. I know a little bit about it, mostly because I boned up in advance of this conversation today. We're going to be talking about influencer marketing and user-generated content and how that gets used in marketing. These are areas that I think are fascinating and have a place in certain types of marketing campaigns and in positioning and in connecting with the audience. They're just not areas that I've had much experience with. And so thankfully, I'm not going to be the one teaching this subject today. We have a guest who's going to join us and walk us through a little bit of sort of the overview of this world and maybe help educate me a little bit on where it works, where it doesn't, and how to test it out and get started in the area of influencer marketing and, as it's known to those in the know, UGC. And that's Audrey Donaldson, who is across the country from me in Brooklyn, New York. Audrey, welcome.
Hi, David. Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm thrilled because, as I said, I know so little about this. I'm a direct response guy. I'm a list building guy. I'm a strategist from a very different perspective when it comes to marketing. But as technology and as social platforms have become central to so much of the way that we interact, the way that we communicate, the way that businesses and brands message, this has become an obvious sort of logical way to communicate with an audience, right? And there's, let's look at older technologies. Even back in the early days of television or radio or newspapers, there were influencers who could have an impact on an audience, right? I think the most obvious one to me is like soap operas.
Yeah,
you would have characters on soap operas who were actually showing a product in the episode.
But absolutely,
we have to adapt with the times, and I don't really know how it works these days. So. So I wonder if you can give us sort of an introduction to the world of influencer marketing, just so that we have a baseline for what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So influencer and UGC are a little bit different, but just an overview would be an influencer, a brand would leverage an influencer to leverage their audience to create content, promote their product, promote their service. A UGC creator or UGC like type campaign would be the brand or service leveraging just an everyday content creator, maybe with less of a following, who's creating consistent content on your social channels, for your paid ads, for your email marketing, pretty much anything that you would want a consumer's opinion on, or like a viable review of your product or service of. That's where UGC comes in.
So, I was thinking at the beginning of this, and we'll dive into this in a few minutes, UGC actually probably has a broader application into
absolutely.
A lot of businesses that, I wouldn't have thought of until I just heard that explanation. So that's great.
Absolutely.
And you also talked a little bit about the where this stuff happens, and that was broader than I thought, particularly with the UGC stuff.
Yep.
Because as soon as I hear influencer,
I
think by default of certain platforms. TikTok
absolutely.
And Instagram are the ones that come to mind most immediately. And
absolutely.
I'm going to share an anecdote, and then I'm going to turn it over to you to sort of walk us through the where stuff a little bit more. So in preparation for our conversation today, what do I do usually? I want to find out a little bit more about my guest. I jump online, right? Well, I'm not going to Instagram or to TikTok. I don't even have a TikTok account.
And how dare you? How dare you?
But I usually go to LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And so I went, I read about you. I read about your history on LinkedIn. But you don't have the kind of presence on LinkedIn, I imagine, that you have elsewhere. And that's
Correct. Logically
going to be intentional because you're trying to position yourself in front of certain audiences.
Correct.
And so I imagine like... I don't see influencer marketing really happening quite the way that I think you do it on a platform like LinkedIn, but I also imagine it does exist and I just don't understand how it does. So help me understand this in sort of a broader context regarding the where.
Sure. I mean, influencer marketing definitely does happen on LinkedIn. It's just different influencers because it's a different audience. So LinkedIn influencers would be big players in the marketing space with hundreds of thousands of followers. They're influencing their point of view or whatever businesses they're partnering with onto their followers. Versus Instagram, TikTok, those are individual people who leverage similarly their audience, their followers, millions of followers on their lifestyle, the products they use, the services they use, the literally anything, where they travel to, the hotels they stay at. So LinkedIn is definitely, like we all know, very business focused, and Instagram, TikTok is lifestyle focused. You can get influencers on either channel. It's just going to be for where you're wanting to be influenced by.
Right. And that's exactly what I was hoping you were saying. It's like, you know, the audience will dictate based on where they're hanging out, right? Yep. Where you're going to show up. So perfect.
Absolutely.
So I think about the influencer stuff, and let's separate the two as you did earlier. Let's talk about influencer stuff and let's talk about the user generated content, because I think it'll be clearer that the influencer stuff typically tends to associate in my mind with things that I would refer to as brands rather than businesses.
Absolutely.
So where does it work, and where do you think it doesn't work or can't work as well or as easily?
So the influencer space typically historically has worked really well for consumer products. However, we've seen in the recent years that consumers are getting smarter and smarter and know when paid ads are paid promotions. So it's less as effective as it was a couple of years ago, but it's still very, like, you see Kim Kardashian wearing something, you're influenced by her outfit. You see the hottest person on TikTok running with a water bottle. Where do I get that? It's still very, like, very influential in the consumer product space.
So you were saying consumers are getting smarter and smarter, and this goes back to one of my very favorite books to reference when we talk here, and it's a copywriting book by a guy named Eugene Schwartz called Breakthrough Advertising. Mm-hmm. And in that book he talks a lot about market sophistication. Now market sophistication in his definition talks about how, you know, you used to be able to say something very simple like, you want to lose weight, take a pill. Right. And then everybody would get into the, all right, pills can help you lose weight. Now we got to find the next level of sophistication in our messaging. Well, you need a pill with a certain ingredient, and then the next level, an ingredient that's sourced from this particular place. And so there's this refinement. I'm curious if, as there's a shift in the awareness or the sophistication of the market when it comes to influencers, how have things changed or shifted to acknowledge that shift in the awareness of the consumer?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we learned that in the early stages of influencer marketing, anyone could go on their platform and be like, I love this mug. And now a lot of consumers will be like, if you post, I love this mug, we all know that you're getting paid to say that. Versus now consumers really want to see you using the mug every single day in all of your videos. And they're like, oh, she actually really likes this. Or you can kind of get a sense of if you're a wellness or a beauty blogger and you are constantly trying all these beauty products and you really, really like this one. Sure, it might be sponsored, but like, if consumers can feel your authenticity, your genuine opinion about a product, it will still sell out on Amazon.
So let's now pull back the curtain and understand what's happening with regard to that influencer and that, you know, proverbial mug that we're talking about. How does that get arranged? And is the, you know, what I heard there was, okay, the influencer says this once and then they move on. But now we got to, like, the influencer has to live with this product for a while. Is that a longer engagement, a longer investment for the brand, or is there some additional sort of aspect to that relationship?
Sure. I think you can go about it two ways. A lot of we're seeing now is what we call long-term partnerships, like what you just said. So it will be a paid recurring series. So you do give them the product. They try it out for a month or so, see if they like it. If the creator likes it, then you enter into a 3, 4, 5 series of videos talking about, I don't know, them using it, a lifestyle shoot, you know, that kind of stuff. Or you can go down the rabbit hole of finding creators that specifically are in the coffee space or specifically reviewing mugs or have a whole slew of mugs. So, right, like bringing in a new mug that they absolutely want to talk about is not a crazy thing for their audience to hear. It's something that they're very conditioned to do. So introducing something new in that niche fits seamlessly.
What I'm curious sort of how the relationships between a brand or product and a creator slash influencer, I guess, is what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
What models exist there? Is there a retainer relationship the way that like a copywriter or an email writer might have with a brand to continue mm-hmm. generating content? Or is this hey, let's try this out for a while? What do those arrangements look like?
It definitely depends on the brand. I think this industry is really entertaining because it's still, there's no industry standard. So it's really just brand to brand, influencer to influencer, agency to agency. But I think for the most part, if you contracted an influencer and you wanted them to try your product, you would send them their product or your product. And then if they were interested in working with you over a 6-period or a 6-video series, then you could either pay like per video. So mm-hmm. like we're contracting you for 6 videos. We'll pay you after everyone has been posted. You could do half up front, half when everything's done. It really just depends on the relationship that the creator and the brand want to both get into, but either of them are very acceptable.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it does. Okay. And, you know, I'm thinking about this and saying, wow, I really don't know, which is why these are, you know, genuine questions that I'm asking here.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about some additional considerations. Like this is borrowed real estate, right?
Yeah.
No, yeah. None of these participants that we've been talking about actually own the platforms where all of this stuff is being shared.
Nope.
And so I'm curious to know, is that an issue? Is it a problem? Is it not an issue because the content that gets, you know, the person who's making content is making money off of making a video and you know, the platforms that would be, you know, Meta owned or TikTok owned, or in the case of YouTube, you know, Alphabet owned. Are they willing participants in this process as well? Do they have problems with it, or do they have rules around it? How does all that
absolutely
work?
Absolutely. There are a million rules all the time for each platform, and they're all different. And yeah, it does. We do run into problems. There's a handful of times where we've contracted an influencer to post something, and because they've said something in a specific way that the TikTok algorithm doesn't like, or that the Meta algorithm doesn't like, the video gets suppressed. And so we paid thousands of dollars to get 200 views. So that's absolutely a problem. And so, yeah, it's my job as the agency or the person in charge of the campaign to make sure that we are following all the rules of the platform. And if there, which I'm sure this will happen in the future, but if there's a way where we don't have to deal with these algorithms, or there's some way where the brand can own the content or the influencer can own the content, then that'll change everything. But yeah, it's something that we deal with on a daily, hourly basis.
Well, I'm sorry to open up that can of worms, but thank you for
no, it's okay. everyone's going to run into it if they start posting or working with creators. Yeah. So
you raised the point, you know, maybe algorithms or third party platforms may not mm-hmm. be, you know, part of the issue in the future. And I am also thinking about like, what is the shelf life of this content? Is it something that could be repurposed and reused with the brand having more control over it?
Yeah. So the shelf life is a really interesting question because, like the algorithms, it depends on the platform. Like YouTube, since it is a searchable search engine, practically, the shelf life is insanely longer. But TikTok and Instagram Reels, you're just scrolling. So once you see it, no one ever really goes back and searches for it. TikTok's a little bit better than Instagram because you can like type in certain things, but it's for the most part, TikTok and Instagram are the shelf life is the smallest it can get.
Which I guess, you know, for somebody in your position, you're the agency, right? You have both there's both an upside and a downside for you in that you're constantly trying to create and match new partnerships.
Yep.
But you have to keep up with, like, you know, at some point there's an endless amount of inventory, I guess is the point.
Correct.
What's the downside?
The downside is cost, right? Like you have endless amount of inventory, but if you're having to pay constantly high dollars for that inventory, then it's just unfeasible at some point, which is why the influencer and the UGC creator go hand in hand a lot of the time. So you'll have the cheaper content creator, the UGC creator, creating dozens of pieces of content for you on a monthly basis that you're just constantly putting out. You're testing things, you're trying different hooks that really resonate with your consumer. And then you have the influencer, the heavy hitter, go in and hopefully hit a grand slam in a one-shot deal that drives more people to see all the content that you've been putting out month over month.
This is an area of marketing that I'm always concerned about because it doesn't have the trackability, I guess, the sort of direct ability to know these sales came as a result of this campaign. Yep. It's not as clear. Yep. And so obviously that's something that you're in a role likely of justifying, you know, to clients a lot. But I'm curious, what is there that does exist that helps you understand this was a success aside from views to know, like, you know, was there an uptick in orders or in, you know, brand awareness? I'm looking back at a classic book that I think more people in the marketing world should know about, but don't, called Reality in Advertising by a guy named Ross Reeves.
Okay.
And he talked a lot about, you know, tracking these big ad campaigns that existed back in the 50s and 60s when he was working and how little effect most of the campaigns had, but how the advertising industry didn't really share that with their clients and the clients were always in the dark. Now, I'm not suggesting anything here. I'm simply saying this is one of the areas of marketing where you could have a huge amount of success. And it's clearly attributed to it.
Yeah.
And you could also have a huge amount of success and not be able to attribute, but that doesn't mean that this should go away. This is a necessary and really effective area. Yeah. How do we manage all of that, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. I feel like that's a very big question to try and answer right now. if I could break it down a little bit, I would say the two major things that we look for in campaign success, or I would say three, would be obviously views. So you look at the views, how many people actually watched it. The retention on the video is also really good. So if maybe people viewed it, but it was only for like 2 seconds, that's not great. But if they viewed it for over 50% of the video, that's a win. Another one would be total brand awareness. When people start, and this is like the easy one, but like when people start talking about your brand or you have an interesting page or you're putting out a ton of funny TikTok videos, it's like people start following you, want to be a part of your ecosystem, and then that you just start to become top of mind whenever your niche comes up, right? For an example, Nutter Butter, like the cookies Nutter Butter, has started putting out some unhinged TikToks recently and they're hilarious, but now whenever I think of cookies I think of Nutter Butter. So it's like it's just this kind of like top of mind spiral that this content does. And then the second one to actually truly measure, to get something measurable on a specific campaign, I really like to leverage Google Analytics and just see how many people we drove to landing page, to the website, in a specific time frame, because we know that once a video is posted, there's a certain amount of like hours that this video will be really impactful for. And so we'll look at the traffic in that time frame, and then we'll look at how many like checkouts we had, how many added carts we have versus our like normal rate. And so that's kind of how we tell a campaign success story. And it's pretty much the only real way outside of like followers and that kind of stuff that we can tell how specifically our dollars spent on this influencer really impacted our bottom line.
You gave me more detail about how to track attribution, I think, than anybody ever has on this subject. Oh. So thank you. I think that, look, if you're thinking about like social listening capabilities and the ability to track mentions of a brand right, over a period of time and see that there's more discussion about it, you could probably also track sentiment, I'm assuming.
Absolutely. And so that...
coupled with the, you know, conversions on sales in a window of time, that's actually quite more significant than a lot of other areas where we have sort of no idea about sales. So thank you. I think you actually did a great job answering that question.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the UGC stuff, because you started talking a moment ago about how they can work hand in hand, and that can be beneficial for the brand. Explain that in a little bit more detail. But also, I want to go into this question that I raised earlier, which is UGC probably has a broader application, and you can talk about that as well.
Yeah, so they go hand in hand, because if your brand has very little social presence, or maybe, like, to be completely frank, an unappealing social presence, and especially if you're like wanting to be an aesthetic brand, in the beauty, health, wellness space, which is brands that I work with. So aesthetic is really important. If you hire an influencer to drive traffic to your website or to your social presence, or maybe to a certain product, it doesn't hit as hard if there's no one else talking about your brand. You have no other social proof. You just have a couple pictures of your product. It just doesn't, like, it doesn't resonate, because everybody knows that you just paid this influencer to speak about your brand, and you may see 10 sales. But if you have a thriving, growing social feed, it doesn't mean you have to have 10,000 followers. You can have a minimal amount of followers, but people just want to see that people that look like them are also using the product, have also found success with your service. And so once you have this steady flow of content, that's really resonating with your target audience, that's speaking to their problems, that's speaking to the issues that they have and why your product or service has helped them, then you can go in and have an influencer shine a giant light on your social feed, your website, and say, hey, all of these people have also used our product, have also really loved it, have also found success with our service, and you should too. The transactions just 10x themselves.
Yeah. It makes a ton of sense. I'm thinking about industries outside of the ones that you happen to specialize in. You know, I mentioned before we started recording that a lot of the folks who listen to this podcast happen to be in professional services space, things like financial advisors, who, by the way, up until like a couple of years ago, were never allowed to use testimonials in any of their marketing. But the federal government changed their rules, and now they can. So I'm curious, like, that's a place where you could use user-generated content to talk about stuff, as long as it's within the, you know, the guidelines of what's allowable in that industry. And I imagine many others well beyond, you know, the consumer product space.
Oh, absolutely. We work a lot with service industries in the healthcare, wellness, beauty space. And so outside of that, I mean, any service industry that has a service to sell to their consumer has target audiences, has a target demographic. And so those people have real problems that you're helping them solve. And so UGC comes in and speaks to those problems, It doesn't always have to be like solution, like review, problem and answer. It could just be, I hung out with Greg and he changed my life because I started, I don't know. But we come up with scripts. I promise my copywriting is better than that. but yeah, no, service industries perform just as well, if not as great as any consumer product does, because people need services too. So why wouldn't UGC or consumer videos work on your company? They will.
No. I think that was great. And I often find myself doing really poor jobs at copywriting when it's off the cuff as well. So I feel you. What does like the difference between the content when it comes to the influencer versus UGC? What's the feel like? Obviously the numbers of impressions and stuff, that's not relevant to my question. Mm-hmm. What I want to understand is like, what does user generated content look like?
Sure. It looks like someone, your neighbor, honestly, just picked up a video camera and started talking to you about the service or product that they just discovered. And so it's generally less polished. It has more text on screen, but it really feels like you're FaceTiming somebody. It really feels like you're in their apartment, in their house, you're in the car with them while they discuss this experience that they had or this product that they can't get rid of or all of these things. So it's way less polished than an influencer post, because the idea around an influencer is, right, they have this like larger than life lifestyle. They feel a little bit unattainable versus a UGC creator. It's like just your buddy down the street that picked up a phone and started recording.
What you're describing is actually something that I see quite a bit in the advertising space a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious I'm thinking of one particular ad that was for like a prepared food delivery service or subscription service, mm-hmm. where it felt like exactly what you've just described. And I'm curious whether we're now seeing like this very meta thing, where we have actors who are impersonating or not impersonating, but playing the role of an actual customer. Delivering in this very sincere, genuine, I'm a customer of this product and I'm passionate and emotionally attached to, use of it, but it's really just an ad.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think we've all seen those TV commercials where the brand or company is like, this is a real customer. And it's like, how many times do we actually believe that the person on screen that they're interviewing that looks polished and looks like an actor is actually like their 3,000th customer that they just kind of picked up out of a lineup? No one's actually really believing that, but they still run an ad. It still works. It still does what it needs to do. So UGC is kind of implementing that into your social presence. The best thing about UGC is it kind of takes your responsibility of having to create a ton of content to reach your target audience off of your plate, because as business owners, we absolutely do not have time for that. And the algorithm is just so demanding now with how much content you need to put out to actually make an impact, that UGC not only acts like your customer, but they can lead your content strategy. So it's just, they take over your entire presence online, and it can really, really, really grow.
We're just about out of time, but I want to make sure that before we wrap up that we all understand a little bit more about what you do and who you serve. And I know that you're sort of in the middle of the relationship between the creators and the brands. And so I'm curious, who do you tend to work with? Who is the person who should say, I want to know more? How do I reach out? Like, is it both of those? Is it one side or the other? How does that all work?
Yes, absolutely. So our bread and butter that we love to work with, I have been in the marketing space for forever on the brand side. So our clients are healthcare, wellness, or beauty products or services, and for women. And so, like we were talking about the service industry, we actually do really work with a ton of brands or companies in the service space. And we manage the relationship. We do everything A to Z, from finding creators, creating the content, editing the content, doing all the payment information, that kind of stuff, so the brand doesn't have to, and posting and scheduling and creating an aesthetic feed for you. And then we also recruit content creators. So we have a community of content creators that's always growing, and we help them become better content creators. Mm-hmm. And then we also pair them with brands, so we get them jobs. So if content creators want to come to us, or if brands come to us, we kind of meet in the middle and manage the relationship.
That's brilliant. And it makes it so much easier than having to go out and find a
yes.
new, you know, creator every time you have a campaign that you need yep. to work on. So yep. I love it. How do folks find out more about you? Where should they go, and how can they reach you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find us on our website, thedoyen.co. All of our information's there, and you can find all of our socials there. We have a lot of fun on Instagram and TikTok, just creating silly content. But yeah, we're all there.
So it's thedoyen.co. It's thedoyen.co, not com, but co.
Correct. Yep.
Perfect. Well, Audrey Donaldson, thank you so, so very much for joining me. This has been great. And you've answered a ton of my questions, and you've even put up with some tough questions from me. So I really appreciate you, you working through all of that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Indeed. Folks, you've been listening to More Perfect Marketing. If you know somebody who could benefit from listening to this episode, please share it with them. Until next time, my name is David Baer. Take care.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. Now you can put what you've learned here into practice when you join the free listener community at mpmcommunity.com. That's mpmcommunity.com. When you join today, you'll receive David's collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, plus additional business building training. So don't delay. Join us today at mpmcommunity.com. We can't wait to welcome you.